reasonably close, but I think McCann and Mrs.
Exactly what it did to Ireland in the early 1800s. That country's economy was based on the potato, and when the potato crop failed year after year, thousands of starving Irish decided the only choice they had was to leave. And that's how the mass migration of the Irish to places like Canada began. In his book, Flight from Famine, Donald McKay documents the conditions these people were leaving behind and the uncertain futures that lay ahead of them. Mr. McKay, just how bad was it for the Irish in Ireland during the early part of the last century?
Just after the Napoleonic War, when Ireland was hit by a tremendous economic depression, there were 14 famines in a period of, between 1815 and 1842. Before the Great Famine even occurred, there were 14 famines, large or small, all due to the failure of the potato.
Was it bad weather or bad management
that led
to the failure of the potato?
Well, first of all, I mean, Ireland, you know, since the early 1700s, had been a monoculture devoted to the potato of the west of Ireland, and so it was an agricultural system waiting for a disaster to happen, because you have a monoculture and it fails, that is your ballgame, that's it. And it was, they got some tremendous bad weather in 1816, 1817, again 1820. That is, the winters were absolutely horrible, but the summers were cold and wet, and finally, to finish it all off, a potato disease, which had been carried, of all things, across the Atlantic from the eastern seaboard, from Nova Scotia, from New England, and just sort of decimated the whole crop.
What were living conditions like for the peasants, Irish farmer in those days? That's the bulk of the people who left Ireland and came to North America.
Not the very poorest layer, who couldn't afford to. I mean, the people who were really destitute couldn't afford to, and a million of them died. But the level just above that were the people who tended to come, and the living conditions for them, there were a lot of misconceptions that I tried to correct. One was that most of the Irish came to Canada during the Great Famine, that is in the 1847 period, where in fact most of the Irish came to Canada before the famine, between the years 1815 and 1847. And in one generation they came, most of them. And that was where the basic ones who settled here in the Ottawa Valley, for example, came from, and the rest of Ontario, the rest of Canada. They were people driven by economic necessity. Those after the Napoleonic War who could foresee the future said, well, there is no future here. We have to save what money we made during the better years of the war, when they were selling commodities to England. We have to save our money and leave for Canada, which they did.
So there were other factors apart from potato famines, loss of crops that led to this mass migration.
Well, yeah, and it goes back so deeply. It goes back to Elizabethan times, when the English invaded, looking for land, took the land of the Irish in effect. So that you went back to the business of the English being in charge of the Irish economy, of the Irish way of life, and the penal laws, all of which, over a long period of time, had resulted in this tremendously unfortunate situation the Irish found themselves in when they were able to leave finally in 1815. Their morale was low, everything was bad about what had happened to them in the past, and it took the ability to come to Canada and get land of their own and achieve some independence, where in a short time, and this is the great thing about human nature and about the Irish, I felt that they achieved so much in so little time once they got here.
They really better off when they came here? I mean, they were facing some pretty appalling conditions here.
Well,
too.
Not at first, because they had to come through in the bad years, and of course I don't want to exaggerate the bad years. There were certain years when there were outbreaks of cholera. When they arrived, they would have to go into quarantine at Gros Isle, and of course in those bad years the quarantine conditions at Gros Isle were horrendous. You had people stuffed onto that little island by the thousands, where you had hospital space or hut space, whatever it was, for hundreds. You had people, the sick and the well, thrown into one bed, because people didn't understand the nature of infection at that time, and didn't understand where typhus came from and how infectious cholera was. And so you had the thing spreading. You know, 100,000 people came and 20,000 died, which showed how infectious the thing was. But once they arrived and got settled, and got their 100 acres, which, of course, was a wonderful thing for land-hungry people, because then they had as much land as the landlord used to have back home, and learned how to use an axe, which was another thing. They didn't know how to cut trees down, because there were no trees in the west of Ireland. Within such a short time, 5-6 years sometimes, they began to prosper and to assert their rights, and you just began to see what how little it took to have these people regain their humanity.
So many of them came to this part of the country, to the Ottawa Valley area. What attracted them to come here, to settle in this part of the country?
Well, first of all, the Irish began to come and then therefore attracted others later, because the military settlements at Richmond and Perth and Lanark were attracting soldiers disbanded from the British regiments, which were, a lot of these people were Irish, and one of the big regiments here was the 99th, which was the County of Dublin regiment, which had fought in the War of 1812. When they disbanded at Quebec City, they moved up to Richmond. A lot of them were Irish Catholics. But the big push, and the thing that interested me most, was the first big invasion, so to speak, or the immigration, of the Irish Catholics from County Cork. They were brought over rather accidentally to the Ottawa Valley by Peter Robinson, who was part of, a member of the legislature in York, and he happened to be in London when the Secretary of State for Colonies decided that it would be a good idea to plant some, at least British subjects, English-speaking, along what is now the Rio Canal, Rio River, in case the Americans wanted to invade again, at least there'd be some depth behind the front of the St. Lawrence. And they started putting the Irish in there along with the troops that had been settled there. And it sort of served a double purpose, to populate Upper Canada and to get rid of dissidents in Southern Ireland at the behest of the Anglo-Irish landlords, who wanted them out, because there were great uprisings happening throughout the countryside and a lot of trouble. So Peter Robinson's job, he didn't know anything about the Irish, he didn't speak Irish, he wasn't even a Roman Catholic. His job was to go through the country, recruit these people, and to bring them over. He brought 500 families first, and it was so popular, he went back and got more, expecting a few hundred more. 50,000 people applied to come to the Ottawa Valley.
I'm amazed at the numbers of people that came in 1 year, 1847, which I think it was one of the worst
100,000. Yeah.
There must have been a steady stream of ships going back and forth across the Northern Atlantic.
There was, and of course the reason they were coming here rather than the States at that period was they were coming in these old timber ships, which would go over loaded with timber from the Ottawa Valley, and they were coming back in ballast or empty, and all of a sudden the ship owners began to think, well, we can make a lot of money with human ballast. We'll just get these people aboard and we'll charge them.
So these people, were they encouraged to leave Ireland? Were they forced to leave Ireland?
They weren't forced to leave Ireland, but they were encouraged, certainly, by, you know, Peter Robinson would go out and tell them the sort of lives they'd live here and encourage them and help them. And this was a government-sponsored thing. And it seemed to me unfortunate the government never carried through with these. This was in the 1820s. The government then dropped it, tried to get the landlords to take it up, and a few of them did. You might say enlightened landlords, I suppose. These people did quite well.
Well, many of us can trace our heritage in Canada back to those early immigrants, a time when the Irish made up one quarter of the population of this country. For anyone tracing a family tree or just interested in this period of history, this is a fascinating book. It's called Flight from Famine by Donald MacKay. It's available in most bookstores and sells for $29.95. And coming up next, what was it really like for these immigrants when they came to the Ottawa Valley? A play back in the 1970s called Yonder Lies the Valley. It tells the story of a group of Irish and Scottish immigrants who arrive in the valley in the 1830s. Well, Lakeside Players, one of Ottawa's newest theater groups, has resurrected the play as their first major production. It opens at Lakeside Gardens next Tuesday evening. David Hudson directs and acts in Yonder Lies the Valley. Hello.
Hi.
David, we've just heard from Donald MacKay how horrible things were back home, especially for the Irish. These people had high hopes of coming to a land of plenty. Were they much better off when they first arrived in places like the Ottawa Valley?
The ones that settled in the Ottawa Valley certainly did not have it easy. I mean, it was very, very bad. The conditions, I think they had no idea the conditions that they were going to be faced with when they did get off those foul-smelling timber ships that brought them over.
What kind of obstacles did they have to overcome once they got off the boat?
Yeah, well, they got off the boat. A lot of them got off at Montreal, and made their way up by steamer boat, up to Ottawa, along the St. Lawrence and Ottawa, and then up to Chat Falls, and made their way over wagon roads, thinking they were coming to a land where all they had to do was put up a house, and were given the acres or the acreage to settle. This is one of the things that the government promised them if they did come out.
100 acres.
Yeah, and wonderful, wonderful acres. You're just beautiful, beautiful. You'll always be rich as quick as you get off the boat. And this is the kind of thing that these land agents were sort of expounding with a lot of the people that came over, the Irish and the Scotch. And I guess it was they thought would be a different and a better way of life than what was happening in their own country at the time. The biggest thing, I think, the draw was the fact they were going to get away from the potato famine, the Irish did, and find a new life. Now, not all of them settled in the Ottawa Valley. We must realize that in the States there was an awful big portion of the immigrants did go to New York State and other states, mm-hmm. and did very well. I mean, they settled in, and they didn't have, they had the hardships, but the Ottawa Valley is not sort of the greatest place in the world if you happen to be involved in agriculture, as we all very well know.
Well, how is this part of our history dealt with in the play Yonder Lies the Valley?
Well, what we do is we go back in time and sort of like looking over their shoulders of various families that had the problems or did come to Canada, and some of the hardships they went through. First of all, dealing with the Laird of MacNab, who set himself up as a feudal baron, more or less, after being kicked out of Scotland. And then from there, we jump ahead and we see, we look into the lives of some of these families that did come over. And in it, naturally, there's a lot of folklore, there's a lot of storytelling and drama, which makes it kind of interesting and a lot of fun.
We don't want to mislead anyone. This is not a downer play, I don't think. There's a lot of music,
no.
Dancing, laughter.
Oh, no, it's a lovely play. It's the kind of thing where you can laugh, and there probably might be moments that there might be maybe a tear in someone's eye. Right?
Does it kind of celebrate the courage and the survival of these people who had the stamina to fight and survive the horrendous conditions they had to deal with?
To carve a niche out of the forest, yes. And to deal with our kind of climate and the weather conditions that we have. And there's some great moments there. How they struggled and how they persisted and hung in there is amazing. If it wasn't for them, I mean, we'd have very little what you call rich folklore in the Ottawa Valley.
David, what do you think we can learn from this period of history, from these kinds of people? I mean, these are a lot of our forefathers.
That's right. There's better times ahead. How can I put this? But, you know, there's one thing. You know, we're having a lot of problems today, as we all know. And different way of life. I mean, how do they deal with, I mean, getting back to sort of the basics, and it's called basic survival of trying to sort of just live day to day and make the best of it and work things out.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that's what I like about this play, because it kind of tells you that.
Does it leave you with a good feeling?
Oh, definitely. That's the reason I wanted to do it. I kind of almost pushed the theater group in doing it, because it gave me such a good feeling, and I'm sure a lot of people who do see the show, in fact, I would say I would most of them will have a good feeling. There's no real downer about this show. It's a kind of show that people come in, it's a high, and you leave on a high. And I think we need more of that today. And without doing any serious thinking, there's no hidden messages. It's simple little stories. We're sort of stepping back in time.
It's called Yonder Lies the Valley.
Right.
When does the play open?
We open on Tuesday the 6th at curtain times, 8 o'clock. And tickets are adults are $6. Students and seniors are $4. And we're going to have a special seniors discount night.
How long is the run?
The run is 2 5 nights.
All next week, or over the course of next week?
Two nights next week, the 6th and the 7th, and then the 12th, 13th, and 14th.
Good luck with it. Thank you very much.
And listen, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
David Hudson, he's directing the production of Yonder Lies the Valley. for the Lakeside Players. It's now 8 minutes to two. Clock. Well, you can tell for sure once we're into November, the Christmas craft fairs and bazaars start springing up, and there are several of them happening around the region this weekend.